They hate because they fear.
And they fear because they feel that the deepest feelings of their lives
are being assaulted and outraged.
They do not know why.
They are powerless pawns.
Powerless pawns.
They are powerless pawns
in a blind play of social forces.
Richard Wright.
Productions, a blind play of social forces. Episode 7, Papa and Eyes.
Abdil Krejcu. He was born in Yugoslavia many years ago. This place does not exist anymore. He grew up in a town called Kosovo. This town was not a safe place for my papa. There was much hate for him. Now he lives in my room, watching over me to make sure I am safe. I see you smile. Laugh. That is a doll. An ugly handmade doll. Why does she show us this? Where is Peter's snapping turtle again? Or Emma's colorful hermit crabs? This is no doll. This is my papa. See how he wears my papa's shirt? The cuffs trimmed just the way my papa would wear them? See the bright sash of his favorite football club? The woolen socks Grandmama knit for him? See the wink he wore so often? A trickster who loved to laugh. See his hair, his poor hair that would not stay upon his head. If I cannot have a head of hair, he'd say, I'll make sure the hair stays memorable. Like a cartoon, he wore his hair sticking up. My papa. Mama says our soul lives on, in the places we live, in the people we meet, in the clothes we wear. In the objects we touch, our soul lives. We live. You may see a girl with garbage, a frightening doll made from a dead man's clothes. But to me, this is Papa. Not a memory or a doll. My Papa, alive. He was trying to make for us a better place, a safer life. I am here because of my Papa. This is my show and tell.
Blairta walked back to her seat and stowed her papa in her bag. As she watched Carly discuss the Gucci purse her mother had purchased for her in New York, Blairta did not notice the thieving hands of the boy who sat behind her. From her bag to his pocket, her papa made a quick, clandestine journey. The boy's boring bus ride home was made more exciting when he wound a kite string around papa's neck and flung him out the window. Papa bounced along behind the bus, a tiny acrobat flipping and leaping off the uneven pavement. Whenever the bus stopped, he rested, only to be jerked forward seconds later. The boy's laughter died after his prisoner was caught under the tire of a car driving too close to the bus. As the bus drove on, Papa tumbled to the curb where he lay amongst cigarette butts and discarded lottery tickets. One of his wool socks had come off, and stuffing escaped from a torn seam. A curious pigeon picked him up and plopped him on the sidewalk. The bird went about prodding him with its beak and collecting loose threads for its nest. His embroidered eyes proved quite an attraction, but the bird was no match for Blerta's craftsmanship. A lycra'd woman, jogging home, saw Blerta's papa lying prone on the sidewalk, his tiny red sash reflecting glints of sunlight.
Weird,
she remarked as she picked him up. He was damp and caked with grit, and a string hung from his neck. She did not drop him or pitch him in a bin, but brushed him off, wrapped the string around his body, and stowed him in her jacket pocket. Maybe it was the way his eyes seemed to wink, or the way the sparse, bristly hairs on his linen head stuck straight up. Maybe she appreciated the intricately trimmed cuffs on his dingy sleeves. Perhaps she thought her boyfriend would get a laugh out of it. The idol of the Albanian patriarch was with the jogger when she and her boyfriend joined the throng at the 4th Street swap meet, where people turned their junk into junk by sticking price tags to it. Rows of tables overbrimming with baby clothes, toys, books, old tools, and bric-a-brac. Hagglers glowered over the prices of vintage goods. Vendors displayed signs reading, "Best Deal in Town" and "Like New." The jogger did not realize she was traveling with Blerta's papa. Once home from her run, she had tossed her jacket in the wash. The distractions of everyday life had seen to it that Papa remained in his synthetic cocoon through spin cycle, tumble dry, and fold. The boyfriend pointed out the small bulge in her jacket. She held him in her open hand. Only a few hairs remained, and stitches seemed to sprout off of him. His sash had come undone on one side and was dangling like a tag.
"What is that thing?"
the boyfriend asked.
"I don't know. A voodoo doll?"
she said, dancing Papa in front of her boyfriend's face.
"It's cute."
"Weird. It's creepy,"
he replied. She held on to Papa as they wound their way through displays of old petrol signs, novelty coffee mugs, and wedding dresses that were once white.
"Watch,"
she said as she removed a He-Man action figure from a table of toys, pulled off the $5 price tag, and replaced it with the priceless protector of a 10-year-old girl whose father had been killed fleeing his home.
"Think they'll notice?"
In the room she shared with her two brothers, bent over a desk, Blerta Crisieux pieced together a replacement father, gabardine and polyester, wool and cotton, tiny stitches, and delicate embroidery. She lifted him to her nose and imagined she smelled the sweat and smoke that had clung to her with each embrace.
"Papa,"
she cooed.
"My papa."
Papa stars Dr. Michael Westmoreland as the narrator, Emmeline Mao as Blerta, Chad Morgan as the lycra'd woman, and J. Barton Mitchell as boyfriend. Janine was sitting directly in front of me, hunched over like she was examining her desk. And Mr. Oren, God, Mr. Oren, just yammered away about rhizomes or rhinoplasts, some rhino-related something. Still using that ancient overhead projector. The plastic sheets were so old they were yellow. They made that sound. In my stomach... My stomach made this farting noise. Not a fart. to be clear, but like a fart inside of me, and I rubbed the sides of my shoes together as loud as I could to replicate the sound. And then the new kid sitting next to me was going to town on his balls. And Steven Asshat behind me kept accidentally kicking my desk in some Neanderthal flirting ritual. Anyway, Mr. Oren changed slides, and there was a picture of a strawberry root. Only someone had drawn a dick on the slide, and Mr. Oren didn't notice. A couple of the guys in the back started laughing very loudly, and then someone said, "Is that how strawberries reproduce?" And Mr. Oren looked at the screen and blushed and pulled the slide off. And he said something about how if we couldn't behave with lights off, we could just read and take notes from the book. Which was fine with me, because that projector smelled like burnt plastic. It was giving me a terrible headache. Janine was still bent over her desk, but she flinched when the lights came up. I opened my book to the section on tubers, and I pretended to read. Janine, at this point, reaches around like she's going to scratch her back. But she turns her hand around to where the pads of her fingers are facing me. And they were really facing me. Or rather, eyeing me. She had drawn eyes on each of her fingers. Really detailed eyes with colored irises and everything. And there was a green and brown one, there was a blue one, and one that looked like what I imagined vampire eyes would look like. And she wiggled them at me. At me. And she held her hand still. And she didn't turn around or anything. She just held her hand up, and it must have been really uncomfortable. I tried to look down at my book. I did, at the potatoes. But her fingers were watching me. And I secretly looked around to see if anyone else saw this, but they were all reading or sleeping or, God, Jesus, dude, scratching their junk. And I looked at her hair, shiny and black, smelling like outside. And I looked into her finger eyes, like really connected with her finger eyes. And then, I licked my fingers and I stuck them up to hers. She kept her hand still, as if she expected me to do this. And I pressed my fingers into hers. I held them there until the new kid stopped digging in his crotch long enough to say, "What are you doing?" I pulled my fingers away and I looked at them. Not as brilliant as I'd hoped, but there they were. You know, Janine's eyes. Now my eyes. And the bell rang and Janine left. Without even looking at me, just like every other day. And I followed her out, but I lost her in the crowd. I waited until I was safe in a bathroom stall to kiss my fingers.
Super organical. Time is a manacle. Time is tyrannical. Super mechanical. Super organical.
Eyes was written and directed and stars Michael Mau. A shorter version of this already very short story can be heard on the podcast A Moment of Your Time, produced by Kurtco Media, who also produces Solar, which is a podcast you've got to download. after you finish A Blind Play of Social Forces. Trevor Tremaine composes our theme music. Cover art by Geneva Hicks. Sharmarki Purcell reads the epigraph. Additional sound effects courtesy of Pixabay. The song Gypsy Shoegazer is by Kevin MacLeod. To find out more about our cast, to read the original short story, or donate to the show, visit us at ablindplaypodcast.com or on Instagram at Mau House Productions. Now, I was recently introduced to a delicious podcast, Midnight Burger. Written and directed by Joe Fisher, this existential romp through the multiverse is a nerdy cartoon for your ears. Find it where you found A Blind Play of Social Forces. And if you like it, you can thank us for the recommendation by sending us a Venmo tip at A Blind Play Podcast. 1 week from today, Episode 8, A Blind Play of Social Forces. Our title episode.